This is WAMC's Northeast Report Late Edition. I'm Brian Shields. State Senate Republicans in New York in the Elections Committee cast a vote on closing a campaign finance loophole that has played a role in recent corruption trials of the former legislative leaders. But the act could doom the measure for the 2016 session. The latest from our Capitol correspondent, Karen DeWitt.
Campaign contributions from limited liability companies factored heavily in the corruption convictions of the two former leaders of the legislature. The loophole in the state's campaign finance laws also made it possible for several real estate developers and related companies, now part of a new federal probe, to donate hundreds of thousands of dollars to the campaign of Governor Andrew Cuomo. A bill to close that loophole could be stalled, though, in the state Senate. Sponsor Dan Squadron, a Democrat who represents Lower Manhattan and parts of Brooklyn, made the case at the Elections Committee meeting, saying the measure requires that LLCs be more transparent and that the founders of multiple LLCs be subject to the same $5,000 donation limit currently in place for all corporations.
Not as a way for individuals and other corporate interests to skirt campaign finance regulations by creating unlimited, often anonymous, sums of dollars that flood the political system.
Squadron asked committee members to vote the bill onto the floor for a debate and not to pass it along to a higher-ranking committee, the Senate Codes Committee, where he feared it would be buried.
I would also urge the chair not to reference it to the Codes Committee.
His request was not heeded.
We'll be referring this particular bill to the Codes.
After the meeting, Senate Elections Committee Chair Fred Akshar, a Republican from Binghamton, says he's not against the ideas in the bill, but he says GOP senators want a more global conversation that addresses some of the Republican senators' concerns about labor unions having undue influence if the LLC loophole is closed.
Big unions, parent unions, they have many subsidiaries and so on and so forth. As I've said many times, I'm not closed-minded to having this discussion, but I think we need to have it from a very high level.
Barbara Bartoletti with the League of Women Voters says the motion very likely killed the reform bill for the 2016 session.
They really didn't want to have a definitive vote on it. They just voted it out of committee, shoved it along into the graveyard, so to speak, at the end of this year. The committees they've sent it to are one, whether it's 6 feet under or whether it's 3 feet under, it is the graveyard of the session.
And Bartoletti says Senator Akshar's argument equating unions with corporations is like comparing apples to oranges.
Unions are comprised of members, and those members give their small donations, which makes a union powerful or not powerful. When it comes to LLC, it's all one person, essentially.
The Senate Codes Committee does not currently have another meeting scheduled before the end of the session. Its chair, Michael Nozzolio of the Finger Lakes Rochester region, recently had open heart surgery. Senator Squadron says he doesn't hold out much hope.
I have not heard from any individual Senate Republican or the majority leader that they're going to allow this bill to come to a floor vote and follow the rules.
The Democratic-controlled State Assembly already passed a measure to close the LLC loophole. Governor Cuomo put the plan in his budget, but later pulled it, saying he wants to pursue the issue in the second half of the session. A recent poll found that 97% of the public want something done about corruption in state government, though they disagree on exactly what is needed. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
With the case about to go before a judge, the investigation of a fatal police shooting in Troy will be handled by the state attorney general under the provisions of an executive order signed last year by Governor Andrew Cuomo. The Times Union reports that Rensselaer County DA Joel Abelov has now agreed to turn over all files in the case, including grand jury records, to the state attorney general Eric Schneiderman. The attorney general sued the DA over the case involving the shooting death during a traffic stop by Troy police 3 weeks ago, claiming the DA had interfered with the state investigation. The Vermont legislature adjourned its biennium just after midnight Saturday morning. Although lawmakers approved a spending plan that's expected to raise $49 million in new revenue, they also failed to pass some major initiatives. WAMC's North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley with more.
Lawmakers approved a $5.7 billion budget, the one bill that is the absolute priority for the legislature. In the late hours of the biennium, the House and Senate passed bills that give municipalities and regional planning commissions more say on where solar and wind power projects should be located. They also updated forestry laws, but legislators failed to legalize recreational marijuana, a priority of Governor Peter Shumlin. Middlebury College Professor Emeritus of Political Science Eric Davis assesses the legislature in two tracks.
In terms of what they have to do, the most important thing is passing a state budget. They did pass a budget, which the money committee say is balanced. Republicans say that increased spending by too much. In terms of what the legislature chose to do, this year there were some initiatives that didn't make it through both houses. So on the whole, I would say one would have to give the 2015-16 biennium a mixed assessment.
There were a number of hits and misses among the bills that moved through the chambers. Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility was successful in getting the legislature to pass paid sick leave and ban the box, leading public policy manager Dan Barlow to characterize the session as a success.
There's going to be a lot of people talking about what they didn't pass this year, you know, marijuana legislation, didn't do the ethics reform, the possibility of a carbon pollution tax. The legislature also has some unfinished business around the definition of independent contractor. You know, there's a lot of smaller bills this year that passed, I think, in other states would be really revolutionary. And Vermont had a whole bunch of them, things like automatic voter registration when you go to the DMV, just common sense reforms.
Vermont Public Interest Research Group Executive Director Paul Burns says lawmakers, for the most part, dealt with routine issues this session.
It wasn't necessarily the session of monumental ideas or legislation. I've heard it described as housekeeping. And maybe it was more than that. There were a diverse number of issues that the legislature had to address, and I think did a number of those things very successfully. But as many legislators and, of course, the governor make their exit from the state house, it wasn't really the time, I guess, for really big ideas to make it all the way through.
Governor Shumlin, a Democrat, is not running for re-election. Republican Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott is running for governor, and House Speaker Shap Smith, who dropped out of the governor's race, may run for lieutenant governor. The Senate pro tem and at least 14 House members will not run for re-election. I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.
When New Yorkers vote on their school budgets next Tuesday, they will consider spending plans that carry the lowest tax increase since New York's 2% property tax cap became law 4 years ago. That's according to a new analysis by the New York State Association of School Business Officials. Not including the Big Five districts, the remaining 669 districts in New York are calling for an average spending increase of 2.2%, with an average tax increase of 0.7%. Support for WAMC comes from the Town Crier Cafe, live music and contemporary cuisine in Beacon, featuring Kathy Mattea, May 13th, Amy Helm, May 20th. TOWNECrier.com for tickets. Eagle Hill School, Hardwick, Massachusetts, offering a 5-week summer session for boys and girls ages 10 to 16, offering learning diversity and ADHD education, eaglehill.school. Troy Savings Bank Music Hall presenting the host of This American Life, Ira Glass, in Reinventing Radio. An evening with Ira Glass, May 22nd at 3 p.m. TroyMusicHall.org for more information.
I'm Ian Pickus with this WAMC Business News. A major New York City landlord is facing mortgage fraud charges and a tenant harassment lawsuit from the state attorney general, who says the landlord tried to bully tenants out of rent-regulated apartments. Stephen Croman pleaded not guilty today to grand larceny and other charges accusing him of overstating rent revenue to snag $45 million in loans. Meanwhile, Democratic Attorney General Eric Schneiderman also sued Croman and a private investigator. Schneiderman says Anthony Falconite deceived, threatened, and even stalked some Croman tenants, hoping to intimidate them into moving so the landlord could convert their apartments to market rate. Panamanian President Juan Carlos Varela says his company is willing to share information and cooperate with international investigations into offshore accounts following the release of a new batch of the so-called Panama Papers documents. He also defended his country from criticism stemming from the release earlier this year of the first trove of documents from Panamanian law firm Mossack Fonseca that exposed offshore companies of the rich and powerful. Stocks were little changed on Wall Street today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 34 points to 17,705. S&P 500 up 1 point to 2,058. The NASDAQ adding 14 points to close at 4,750. There's more business news coming up on Marketplace at 6:30.
Support for WAMC comes from the Mahawi in Great Barrington, presenting Michael Spector, New Yorker science writer, May 13th, plus London National Theaters, The Audience in HD, May 15th, and jazz from Joshua Redman, June 26th, mahawi.org. Now the regional weather summary.
The generally gloomy weather pattern from last week is gone, and we are looking at bright and mild weather as we work through much of this week. And boy, what a nice change over the weekend. I know we were kind of slowly breaking free of the pattern we were in, so it wasn't the brightest weekend overall, but I happened to be in Schenectady on Saturday. Right around 5 o'clock, it's like the sun just parted the clouds, and it was so wonderful to see the sunshine, and we had some nice breaks of sunshine again yesterday on Mother's Day, and we are looking ahead at brighter and milder weather as we go through the week, so we're going to definitely appreciate this week after last week, which brought plenty of clouds and rain from time to time. Now, we are looking at some drier in place and rather chilly temperatures as we go through the night. So even though we've started to turn that corner a little bit weather-wise, we do have to be aware that there is the threat for a frost or a freeze tonight. So if you have plants that are sensitive to the cold, you want to definitely take action on that, as temperatures will drop back into the lower and mid-30s across most of our area. And we're likely to see some 20s in the Adirondacks and Greens. And moving into the day tomorrow, we'll have high pressure continue to control the weather from the north. There's a front that stalled to our south. It's far enough south that I don't think we're going to see any rainfall from that front, though there might be some clouds from time to time, especially in areas south of the capital region, though it shouldn't be a big deal. The bigger deal will be the dry weather again, as temperatures come up into the 60s in most areas. We may have some upper 50s in the mountains, and a few spots south of Albany may touch the 70-degree mark tomorrow. So a pleasant day ahead for Tuesday. And it looks to get warmer as the week moves along. On Wednesday, we keep it bright with temperatures in the 60s to low 70s. And by Thursday, we're targeting high temperatures that in most areas should reach above that 70-degree mark. So the first week of May really was not an award-winning week by any means. But this second week of May is looking to be quite nice across New York and western New England. And now here's my latest regional forecast. First, for the North Country, the Adirondacks, all of Vermont, the Southern Champlain Valley, including Plattsburgh and Burlington, and the Lake George Saratoga region, including Glens Falls. Tonight, mostly clear and cold, with areas of frost and freeze, low 30 to 35, some 20s in the mountains. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and pleasant, high 58 to 64. For the Northern Catskills, Mohawk Valley, and Southern Adirondacks, including Utica, Gloversville, and Oneonta. Tonight, mostly clear and cold, with areas of frost and freeze, low 30 to 35, with some 20s in the Adirondacks. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and pleasant, high 58 to 64. For the southeastern Catskills, mid and lower Hudson Valley, and interior southern New England, including Middletown, Poughkeepsie, Westchester, Hartford, and Springfield. For tonight, mostly clear and cold, with areas of frost and freeze, low in the 30s. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny and pleasant, high in the 60s to around 70. For the Capital District, including Albany, Schenectady, and Troy, and the Berkshires. Tonight, mostly clear and cold, with areas of frost and freeze, low in the lower to mid-30s. And for tomorrow, mostly sunny and pleasant, with highs in the lower to mid-60s. Region-wide on Wednesday, mostly sunny and warm, with highs in the 60s to lower 70s. And on Thursday, mostly sunny and mild, with highs in the lower to mid-70s. For WAMC, I'm meteorologist Garrett Argianis.
You're listening to WAMC's Northeast Report, Late Edition. Western Massachusetts residents could see their power bills go down under a new rate plan filed with the state by the Eversource Energy Company. The utility says the plan filed with the Department of Public Utilities is 26% lower than the current rate and is the result of a drop in wholesale power prices. Eversource says the average residential customer using 600 kilowatt hours would see their monthly bills drop by $16.31. After a commuter train hit an empty car at a crossing in Westchester County late last month, a state senator is now calling for the coordinated inspection of traffic signals at all such crossings. Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn with more.
A northbound Metro North train clipped a car at the Green Street crossing in Bedford, and while the occupants got out before the collision, New York State Senator Terrence Murphy says it could have been a disaster. The crossing is in Murphy's district, as is the Commerce Street crossing in Valhalla, where in February 2015, a Metro North commuter train crashed into an SUV that was stopped on the tracks, killing five people on the train and the car's driver. Murphy, a Republican, is sponsoring a bill requiring the Metropolitan Transportation Authority and State Department of Transportation to conduct joint inspections of traffic signals at interconnected grade crossings. Murphy says currently the railroad inspects its portion of the system and the DOT inspects the state portion. However, Murphy points out the majority of these signals are on the local system, and it is not known how often these interconnected signals are being inspected. His legislation would add a new section to the railroad law that would establish a required joint inspection by the DOT and MTA every 2 years. Democratic Assemblyman Tom Abenante, whose district includes Valhalla, calls Murphy's bill a good idea and says much needs to be addressed.
We want to make sure that the signals are working. We want to make sure that the signals are clear to the drivers. We want them to stay away from the grade crossings. And then we want to look at these railroad crossings from the point of view of, if a driver gets stuck on one of these, what's the option to the driver? How does the driver get the car and the passengers of the vehicle out of the way before the train comes by?
An MTA spokesman in an emailed statement says that while the agency has not yet had a chance to review the proposed legislation, safety is the MTA's top priority, particularly when it comes to railroad crossings. He says the MTA is open to listening to any ideas to improve safety at crossings. Gary Holmes is DOT spokesman.
Well, we've not had a chance to review the proposed legislation. If it's a conversation about safety, it's one we're interested in listening to all proposals.
Following the Bedford incident, Abenante renewed a call for support of his bill that would direct the state DOT to conduct a statewide study of level grade rail crossings and to submit a report to the governor and the legislature by April 1st, 2017.
Grade level crossings are commonplace throughout New York State, far too commonplace. In some cases, we need to close the crossings. In other cases, we need to put overpasses and other passes. In other situations, we need to improve the railroad crossings. But we need the DOT to participate because we need to have it from the driver's point of view. We don't need it only from the railroad point of view, which is what you get when the MTA and other railroads do their study.
The bill passed the Assembly in March. Murphy is a co-sponsor in the Senate, where the bill is sponsored by independent Democrat David Carlucci. Robert Greenstein is town supervisor of Newcastle in Westchester.
There's no doubt that these on-grade crossings are dangerous.
He welcomes any attempt to increase rail crossing safety, including Murphy's legislation. Newcastle has the Roaring Brook crossing in Chappaqua, which is in the town of Newcastle. Greenstein would like to see it eliminated and an overpass built instead.
The one that's by on Roaring Brook Road, you know, that's less than half a mile from our high school. And it's also, you know, right near the Sawmill Parkway, where there's a traffic light there as well. So what happens is cars, you know, back up due to the traffic light that's on the Sawmill. And there's the chance that they can back up onto the railroad tracks. That has happened.
For WAMC News, I'm Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn.
8 months away from the scheduled completion of the renovation of Union Station in Springfield, Amtrak officials toured the worksite today with the goal of providing suggestions to make the $88.5 million publicly funded project a success. WAMC's Pioneer Valley Bureau Chief Paul Tuthill reports.
Massachusetts Congressman Richard Neal, the driving force behind the Springfield Union Station restoration, wants to utilize Amtrak's Great American Stations project to assure that visitors to the refurbished station will enjoy the same vibrancy and elegance that rail travelers did more than 50 years ago.
We don't want this just to be a museum. We want people to utilize it for a variety of initiatives and activities.
Neal said he is looking for Amtrak's advice, drawn from experience with other station restorations around the country, to recover, restore, and display artifacts such as the original station clock, blackboards that were used to display railroad timetables, benches, and wooden luggage carts. Another goal of the $88.5 million project is to make Union Station a center of activity to serve as a catalyst for economic growth. Patrick Kidd of Amtrak, amidst the clamor of construction work, said that he sees a lot of potential in the plans local officials have for Union Station.
And I think anybody who's involved with this project would realize it's not just a two-year, you know, project. We're looking at a vision that's 20, 30, 40 years down the line and how it can really impact the neighborhood and the surrounding area.
Kidd cited several examples of what other cities have done with their restored train stations to attract visitors to their downtowns.
So we've seen things like pop-up markets, art exhibitions, you can have book readings. We have stations where they do, you know, you can rent out space for private events. You know, that's revenue generation opportunities. Everybody always likes that. You can have public festivals. There are stations or we know communities where maybe they have, you know, a race through downtown or some sort of community-wide event, but they make sure something happens at the station so that people go through that facility. And that's something you have to think of about, too. So maybe there are existing programs that happen in the city every year, but how do you incorporate the station into that programming moving forward just to get people here?
After the restored Union Station opens, Amtrak will promote it as part of the Great American Station Initiative.
So for us, it's really about sharing with communities. So there are others out there that are interested in projects like this. This is a great inspiration to them. You can look at what's worked at some other stations and what they might try here. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You move on to the next idea. So I think there's always that process of kind of breaking things in.
Springfield Mayor Dominic Sarno, who embraced the Union Station redevelopment when he took office 8 years ago, is counting on it, along with the MGM Casino being built about a half mile to the south, to anchor the rebirth of downtown.
Sometimes you got to jumpstart things with public investment, whether infrastructure or something like this, and that generates private investment coming in. And we are seeing that. We're contacted two, three times a week with businesses looking to come to the city of Springfield.
There are plans for 16 additional trains a day to stop in Springfield after track improvements are completed north of Hartford in about a year. Union Station is projected to see 5 million people a year pass through it. Reporting from Springfield, this is Paul Tuthill at WAMC's Pioneer Valley News Bureau on the campus of Western New England University.
A survey of CEOs puts New York 49th in the nation as a place to do business. Chief Executive Magazine asked the CEOs about taxes, regulatory policies, the quality of the workforce, and living environment. High taxes and a high cost of living, especially in New York City, came in bad for business in New York, according to the CEOs, but there is some positive news for New York. One CEO told the magazine that New York has improved under Governor Cuomo, and New York is also in the top 10 in high tech. Northeastern states did not fare well in the survey. Vermont was number 41 in the nation, Connecticut 45th, Massachusetts number 46, California was dead last. Support for WAMC comes from the Glimmer Glass Festival, presenting Puccini's La Boheme, Sondheim's Sweeney Todd, Rossini's The Thieving Magpie, and The Crucible by Ward and Miller, glimmerglass.org. Hawthorne Valley Waldorf School, Ghent, New York. Early childhood through grade 12 on a biodynamic farm setting, a place to study, learn, and grow, accepting applications, nurturing living connections, hawthornevalleyschool.org. Thank you for joining us today on WAMC's Northeast Report Late Edition. Our engineer, Zach Malloy. I'm Brian Shields. Stay tuned for Marketplace. Support comes from Monticello Licensed Real Estate Broker, announcing their new location at 421 New Carner Road Colony, using internet marketing to help sell Capital Region homes. Monticello, NYS.com. Mannix Marketing, Glens Falls, New York, since 1996. A web design and internet marketing firm working to help businesses get found on the internet. Mannixmarketing.com. MPAC presenting Within Two, the final performance in Lebanese sound artist Tarek Atua's years-long project to develop musical instruments for performance to the hearing impaired, May 13th. MPAC.rpi.edu.